everyone. I'm Beauty Kamenfranos, and I absolutely love my intro. It's so difficult to feel sad or mad or bad when you hear this kind of uplifting music. And I think that all of us, every single day of our lives, we have to figure out what it is that we need that can help us to feel good and joyful and centered. And, you know, the fact is that before I heard the music, I was sitting in my office here on the Upper West Side, feeling a little tired after a very, very tough but wonderful tennis workout with my pro. And it was amazing. The music starts, and now I actually start to feel alive. So for those of you who may be tuning in for the very first time, of course, I've been doing the Ask Beauty show here on the Progressive Radio Network. It is going on to 7 years. It's like, where has the time gone? I am a psychotherapist and a sex therapist and the author of the groundbreaking book on relationships, For Better, For Worse, Forever, Discover the Path to Lasting Love. And this is a book only for people who are really serious about assessing who is right for you and also who is wrong for you before committing to any serious relationship. It's amazing. The book, it does it for me. It did it as well. It changes the way that we look at relationships forever. It educates, it empowers, and above all, it keeps us safe. I'm also a national speaker, and of course, I've been in national radio and television now for over 25 years, and I have some new news. I am the new advice columnist for Dan's Newspapers. I have an Ask Beauty column, and it's going to be running to begin with twice a month. And I encourage you, as I have been encouraging you on the show, to write me. I'm really interested in your comments. And of course, I'm also really interested in your questions, because this show is about empowerment, what we need to do, not just about what we need to think or what we need to fantasize about, but what it is that we need to do to really empower ourselves in our life, in our relationships, in our personal relationships, in our business relationships, in our careers. So on the Ask Beauty Show, we talk about all the things that we can actually do to improve the quality of our lives and our relationships. Of course, we naturally talk a lot about mental health issues and sexuality and relationships and how and what, again, we need to do on a daily basis to maximize our physical and emotional well-being despite the day-to-day stressors of life. And of course, my mantra, not just as a psychotherapist, but as a sex therapist as well, but just as a woman, my mantra has been for a very, very long time about the importance of acknowledging and addressing and taking whatever steps we need to take with or without help, the things that get in the way are really being able to live a joyful life. In fact, I give my patients the same homework every single time I see them, regardless of what their, in quotes, presenting problem is. And at the end of every session, I want people, as they go through their days and they go through their weeks, to think about one thing and one thing only. And that is, Am I living my life in ways that are in my best interest? And what I'm hoping, of course, is that people are going to pause and is taking that extra drink or that cigarette or that drug or not exercising or engaging in toxic relationships. I want all of us to be really, really mindful about what is good for us and what, on the other hand, is destructive, self-destructive, and self-sabotaging. So people need, A, to be mindful, and they need to be serious then about really being committed to make some positive changes. And again, you know, what I've hoped that I have convinced you over all these years is that we don't need to take this journey on our own. It is way, way, way too difficult. So reaching out to family, of course, that is functional, positive, healthy family, friends, and if need be, professionals to make our life's journey easier and less isolated and alienated and lonely. Because if we're looking at the reality of what is actually going on mental health-wise in our country, let's take a look at depression in the world. And I think these numbers have really gone up in the last couple of years, you know, as a result of the pandemic. The statistics tell us that there are over 350 million people worldwide who are suffering from depression. In the United States, 17 million adults in the United States are suffering from various different kinds of depression. Females experience depression at roughly two times the rate of men, although I oftentimes question that statistic as well. It just may be that we women, we talk about it more, and perhaps we give ourselves permission to get help for depression more. But I have found that whether or not you are a woman or a man, or whether or not you are gay or straight or trans or bi or heterosexual, we are all, on a journey where we're having to deal with depression and anxiety and loneliness and feelings of disconnect. And of course, you know, the real question is that when we're finding ourselves in this kind of a vicious cycle, what are we going to do? So it is the action. It is the positive action that I have tried to really convince you and reinforce is the way to go when we start to feel really, really, off track. If we're looking at anxiety disorders, we're looking at approximately, again, statistically, 40 million Americans who are suffering from anxiety disorders. And if you're looking at statistics, you know, relationship statistics, look at what is going on in the world of domestic violence. And I keep hoping every single year with all these self-help books and the podcasts and the shows on domestic violence and relationships that we are going to see some diminishing statistics. But in fact, we are not seeing that at all. Because if we're looking at domestic violence, four women still are killed every single day by their so-called intimate partner. If we're looking at divorce, let's look at these statistics. 48% of first marriages end in divorce. 67% of second marriages also end in divorce. And people are somewhat surprised by this third marriage statistic, but that statistic has told us that 73 to 74% of couples marrying for the third time find themselves in front of a judge in a divorce court. So again, what is it that is really going on? And when I give presentations throughout the country and in the city, I have good news. I have really good news that I love to share about what we can again do to find ourselves in healthy and constructive relationships. And I think that it is worthwhile every single week to repeat this. So again, if you are serious about wanting to have a healthy relationship with anyone, there are three things that you need to do. And the first thing, of course, is that each of us needs to be in a good place emotionally and psychologically and psychiatrically. And we have to be willing. We have to be willing to deal with our own issues of depression and anxiety and what I call skeletons in our closet, whether or not it is drug abuse, whether or not it is early child sexual abuse. And if we do this, we are then able to really live our lives in the moment without having one foot in the past and one foot in the present. And as I used to tell my daughter Jordana all the time, of course, she became a student. She may not have wanted to be a voluntary student, but she heard her mother talking about relationships all the time. And I really do believe that the relationship needs to be the icing on the cake, and we need to be the cake. We need to be solid. We need to be in a good place. And if we are serious about pivoting and putting ourselves in a better spot, we need to be committed to doing some work. And the work doesn't need to take 1,000 years. But again, it's about really revisiting what did and did not happen in our own childhoods and emotionally working through traumas of various different kinds and in going through that process. And I'm not suggesting for one moment that this is going to be a tea party or a piece of the cake. You're really able to put behind a lot of the issues that continue to get in the way of your life and relationship. For those of you who are listening to me right now, you have to be honest with yourselves. And if you're finding that there are old issues and you may not even know what the issues are that are interfering with your being able to live a joyful life, give yourself permission. You know, you've tried self-help books and you've gone to retreats and you've talked to family and you've talked to friends, but really give yourself permission to find a good therapist who can, you know, hopefully really help you work through some of these things so that you will then be able to just live a more positive and a happier and a more joyful and a healthier life. So again, we need to be okay. And then number two, and this is something I continually talk about, again, despite all the books and the movies and the shows and the retreats about relationships, we need to become students and educate ourselves about what ingredients actually do go into a healthy relationship. And you know what I'm thinking, you know, talking about relationships, it's not just romantic relationships that I'm talking about. We have to be careful who we let into our lives, our friends, our business associates, our bosses, our neighbors. And I have a mantra in my own life, and that mantra is zero toxicity. You know, I was saying to a patient recently, you know, three strikes, you know, I will, you know, maybe not look the other way, but I will be aware of somebody's bad behavior. And if it persists, three strikes and you're out, you know, it works actually very, very well, because we cannot allow people to bring us down and make us feel crazy. And then again, you know, if we're looking at the formula, the third thing, which is based on my book, For Better, For Worse, Forever, Discover the Path to Lasting Love, this formula is very bottom line, and it really takes you through the process of assessing whether or not the person who you think you are madly in love with, and maybe somebody that you think you would like to marry, is really somebody that is good for you. Or on the other hand, it's also very important to find out whether or not this is somebody who you need to get away from as quickly as possible. So again, we have to be mindful, all of us, of living our lives in ways that are in our best interest. And if we are unsure, and a lot of people who contact me for therapy, they're not sure if living their lives in a particular way is actually functional, or whether or not it is destructive or self-destructive. And we all need coaches. And when you look at the professional athletes and you look at the teams, of course, as a former number 10 junior tennis champion in Canada, we didn't have teams. My dad was my coach. But now we can see in the world of sports that it really does take a village. It takes a team to be able to help us in whatever field we're in or whatever endeavor we are wanting to engage in, to help us to be able to maximize our lives and maximize our potentials. So again, it is about making sure that every single day we are being good to ourselves. And of course, Gary Nowell talks all the time about the importance of plant-based diets and fruits and vegetables and grains and fish. And it is so easy to get off course and make a lot of excuses why we're going to have that extra pie and why we're going to have that extra sugar. So again, it is being mindful. Is this something that is good for me? And of course, we also need to be very mindful of the importance of interaction and socialization. And it's a really good thing that things are starting to open up. I have to confess, I mean, I'm still seeing 99% of my patients on Zoom, and I have not yet socialized. I'm still waiting to see, you know, the best way to go about really getting back into the social scene. I want to be, you know, somebody that is mindful and not behave in ways that are really rash. Of course, also the importance of sleep. And I think about people in Sardinia who take naps. And of course, exercise. How important is exercise in our lives? Weight training and yoga and meditation and massage. And again, the real importance of having supportive people in our lives. And that means eliminating toxins, including toxic people. And that sometimes means family and friends. I'm going to need to take a very, very short little break. And so I will be back in about 30 seconds.
So, Beatty, it's such a pleasure to be with you today. You know, we've spoken several times in the past, and I always walk away feeling energized and inspired by you. And I know how dedicated you are to your work and to your patients. So before we get started, could you just share with our listeners about yourself and your career as a psychotherapist and a sex therapist?
Absolutely. And it's always such a pleasure to see you, Valerie. It really, really is. My career began over 35 years ago, and I'm going to tell you a very interesting story. When I was about 8 or 10 years of age, my parents, and I grew up in an Orthodox Jewish family in Winnipeg, Canada, they bought me a white transistor radio for Hanukkah. And you probably wonder, what does this have anything to do with my career? But this was actually a significant, significant time in my life in terms of, you know, future career goals and what I've ended up doing. So I used to take this transistor radio to bed with me, and I would listen to music. And I don't know how in the world I discovered this show, but there was a call-in counseling show that aired live every single Sunday night. It was called Ask the Pastor. And I was riveted. Now, you have to remember, I'm 8 or 10 years of age, and people would be calling in and they would talk about their marriage problems and they would talk about other different kinds of problems. And for years, I would listen to this show on Sunday night. And for me, it was the most natural thing. Not only did I want to host a call-in counseling radio show, but the idea of giving people advice and helping people to solve their problems, I mean, it was just the most natural thing for me to have wanted to do. So moving forward, I never missed a Dear Ann or Dear Abby column. And I used to think, wouldn't this be amazing if I could have Ask Beattie or Dear Beattie advice columns? And of course, as many of you know, I've been in the national radio and television world for many, many, many years and have written many Ask Beattie columns and have hosted many Ask Beattie call-in counseling radio shows. But what was really interesting is that, you know, before I did my graduate and postgraduate work at McGill University, and of course, I have postgraduate specialization in marriage and family therapy and sexual dysfunction, there never was a question of what I was going to do. I thought maybe at one point, you know, maybe I could be a criminal lawyer. But the idea of helping people, and on my street as a little girl in Winnipeg, people used to come to me all the time, and I don't know why. I was a terrible, terrible student, much to the admonishment of my mom, who was a teacher. But people were always coming to me to ask advice about their problems and about their relationships. So, you know, in a nutshell, there was never a question about what I was going to do professionally. And I'm so lucky that, I mean, I love, love what I do. And of course, I've treated thousands of people over the years with every conceivable kind of problem, people that I would never, ever, ever had an opportunity to meet in my own personal life. You know, I've treated people who have murdered. I have treated people who have been on every kind of drug imaginable. You know, people who've been in and out of psychiatric hospitals, people who've been in and out of prison. So for me, it has been and it continues to be an adventure, Valerie. And, you know, I have a private practice here in New York City and also in East Hampton. So I love what I do as much today as I did over 35 years ago when it all began.
Beattie, that is so fascinating that from such a tender age, you really felt a pull towards understanding people and being able to help them. I think that's just beautiful. And I know that your area of specialty is in the world of relationships and also in the whole area of sexual health. So what do you feel is the biggest challenge for people in creating a healthy relationship?
Well, over the past 35 years, I've thought about all of this a lot. And if we're looking at the statistics, for example, let's talk about the depressing divorce statistics. I mean, the divorce rate for first marriages is 48%. For second marriages, that number is 67%. And couples marrying for the third time are divorcing at rates of 72 to 73%. We're looking at domestic violent rates that are just over the top and increasing every single day. 3 to 4 women are killed every single day, Val, by their so-called intimate partners. We are looking at teenage dating abuse statistics. I mean, who would have dreamed when I was a little girl growing up in Winnipeg or when you were growing up? I mean, who ever dreamed that we would be talking about teenage dating? you look at what's going on in the college world, 30% of college co-eds are talking about having been abused either physically or emotionally or verbally or sexually in their dating relationships. So I have thought a lot about this, and I have good news despite these really, really dismal statistics. I have really good news that I want to share with people. And this good news came about as a result of research that I did with 450 people in the Boston, Connecticut, and Providence areas a number of years ago that actually culminated in my book, For Better, For Worse, Forever, Discover the Path to Lasting Love. So I have real, real clarity, not only about what the problem is, but much, much, much more importantly, exactly what we need to do to never make a mistake in love again. And of course, I go around the country, also in Canada, giving never make a mistake in love again presentations. So number one, first of all, each of us really and truly needs to be in a good place ourselves, emotionally and psychologically and psychiatrically and sexually. And we have to be serious. We need to be willing to deal with our own issues and what I call our own skeletons in the closet, our own unfinished business. Now, of course, the reality is that we cannot change anything that happened or didn't happen when we were growing up in our families, and we can't change anything that happens even 30 seconds ago. But there is a way. There is a way with really good therapy, not bandage therapy, to help people to really emotionally work through the things that are continuing to get in the way of their lives and the relationships, typically stemming from their histories. And, you know, right now in my private practice, you know, both here in New York and in East Hampton, the old unfinished business, that is where it all began. So that if people are in therapy and they're just doing behavioral therapy or cognitive behavioral therapy, I mean, all of those therapies, I mean, there's a place for different kinds of therapeutic orientations, but it really begins at the beginning. And for people who know me personally know that I'm probably the most impatient person that you will ever, ever, ever want to meet. And trust me, Valerie, if there had been a way, or if there is a way to fast forward, not having to deal with our early traumas and our early issues and the things that happened and didn't happen in our life that put us in a place, and of course, none of this is our fault, I would have figured this out a long, long time ago. So again, we need to be in a good place. We need to be serious about working out our issues. And as I used to tell my daughter, Jordana, all the time, the relationship, it needs to be the icing on the cake. We need to be the cake. We need to be solid. We need to be getting into these relationships, not so much of need and neediness, but because we are ready and wanting to find a healthy and loving relationship that can add something to our own healthy and lovely being in terms of where we are in the present. So that's number one. People really don't want to hear that, but the fact is that it is true. Number two, despite all of the, and I talk about this all the time, there have never been more self-help books and coaches and relationship training and seminars and shows, and it goes on and on and on and on. However, despite all of this, we are clearly continuing to miss the boat. So number two, of course, is that the majority of people, rich, poor, gay, straight, trans, Jewish, Christian, Muslim, male, female, have absolutely no idea what the real ingredients are that go into a serious, loving, long-term relationships. I mean, people can talk about things like communication, but they really don't know what that means. And they can talk about problem solving, but they're also really not clear about what that means. And this is not about blaming people, Valerie, at all. But this is about trying to give people a wake-up call. I mean, I hear this all the time about these terrible men and these terrible relationships and all the disappointment and all the dysfunction. And the fact is that we as women, whether we're over 50 or 60 or 30 or 40, we have some serious work that we need to do. And we need to take on some real personal responsibility to doing the work that we need to do to increase the probability of our being able to find and maintain and sustain a healthy relationship. So we really need to figure out what are the real ingredients that go into a successful relationship. And then number three is my book. And the book, For Better, For Worse, Forever, Discover the Path to Lasting Love, it teaches people exactly how to assess. Yes, assess, and it's not sexy, and it's not romantic, and it's not lovey-dovey, but how to assess who's right for you and who's wrong for you before committing to any serious relationship. Because if you think about it, Valerie, we assess everything. We assess lipsticks. We assess what programs we're going to watch. We assess what investments, if we're lucky enough to have investments that we should be investing in. We assess everything, but we almost never think about the importance of our assessing who we let into our lives. And that includes friends, and that includes family, and that includes colleagues. And, you know, when people listen to my Ask Beaty show on the Progressive Radio Network, they hear me every single week in my intro talking about the importance of zero toxicity. Not a little bit, because a little bit of poison will kill you, just like a lot of poison is going to kill you. So we have to be so, so careful. So this formula that I developed, it's kind of like having me in your purse, and it's taking you by the hand and guiding you. And it's the exact same psychological, psychiatric assessment that I do in my private practice. It is the exact same thing that you and me and everybody in the world needs to do when we are assessing who is good for us and who is not good for us. Now, what was very disappointing for me when I did the research, given the fact that I'm the most impatient person in the world in my personal life, you know, very patient professionally, is that my research found is that it takes about a year to find out who somebody is and isn't. And I was very upset about that finding. And unfortunately, we cannot fast forward the process. Now, obviously, if you're seeing a lot of red flags and there's abuse of any kind, including, you know, substance abuse or physical abuse or emotional abuse, I mean, you're not going to stay in for a year to play this thing out. But when you use the formula, when you follow the formula, you feel so empowered because you know exactly what you are looking for, and you know exactly what you need to do when issues and problems arrive. Now, I never suggest that people, you don't just throw away a relationship because there are problems, but it is so important to find out whether you and your potential partner have the necessary communication skills and problem-solving skills and willingness and commitment to, again, my other mantra is to acknowledge and address and resolve as best as we can the issues that are getting in the way of our lives and our relationships. So I joke all the time. I mean, there's only three things you have to do, but as you can imagine, these three things, this is pretty intensive work.
Yes, I absolutely agree with you. And I see for myself that many people, they don't want to take that deep dive. It's too painful,
right,
for them. And it's unfortunate because it's by taking the deep dive that there's an opportunity to resolve these childhood traumas, things that are in us and that we bring to each relationship. I think it's so funny when people, I'm sure you see this, people get divorced, they get remarried, and they repeat the same pattern. But yeah, they're sort of thinking, well, if I marry someone different, it will be different. So they're looking to something external rather than saying, hey, wait a minute, what do I need to do? And I can imagine that is frustrating for you. And that I know that it's when I'm in a healthy place within myself that I'm usually able to make good decisions for myself, including who should be in my orbit, whether it's a love relationship or my friends. So I understand your frustration with that and the pattern that you see replacing over and over again, which leads me to, do you think people give up too easily? Or is it they're making poor choices, or is it a mix of both, or it depends?
I think it's really a mix of both. And, you know, even though the process is oftentimes frustrating, it's also really wonderful to see people make those changes and make those links. I mean, I'm thinking of a woman right now that I'm treating in East Hampton. She grew up in the worst possible family situation. She was abused in every way, sexually, physically, verbally, emotionally, mentally. I mean, it was a disaster. And she left her home when she was 20 and she got married. And guess what? She married a very abusive husband who abused her sexually, mentally, emotionally, physically. So she left that marriage. And she was single for a short period of time. She had a child from her first marriage, and then she meets another man. And, you know, not to be surprised, she repeated the same pattern for 25 years with another man. So she saw, I was giving a presentation in East Hampton very recently, Never Make a Mistake in Love Again. And she decided that she was going to try therapy. She'd been many therapies with many, many different therapists. And for the first time, she was willing to really look at what happened when she was a child and what propelled her as a result of what happened when she was a child to continue to replay that original family drama, which was the abuse of every kind. So I'm so proud of her. What she has done, she's actually gotten rid of most of her girlfriends. She has taken a really, really long, hard look at who stays and who goes and who is she engaged with where it's really in her best interest. And in fact, you know, Valerie, that's the homework that I give every single patient after every single session, regardless of what the problem is. I want people to be mindful as they navigate their days and their nights, whether or not they are living their lives in ways that are in their best interest, or whether or not, on the other hand, they are engaging in destructive, self-sabotaging behavior. But you need to be mindful about this. You have to be honest and serious about taking a look at your own role. It is easy to blame the world. And it is unfortunate so many children grow up in such horrible, horrible family environments. But at some point, it's not about that he's a narcissist, or it's not about that she's, you know, just really verbally or physically abusive. It is about us saying to ourselves, what is it about us that we are willing to remain in destructive and self-destructive relationships? And much more importantly, what are we going to do about it? Are we going to acknowledge, address, and resolve the issues that get in the way of our life in relationships? Or on the other hand, are we going to continue to blame our parents and blame the world and blame the narcissist and blame everybody without taking personal responsibility for our own roles in engaging in toxic dynamics, whether it's with a lover or whether it's with a colleague or whether it's with a girlfriend?
Wow. Yeah, it takes so much courage, as I said before, and taking responsibility and not pointing the finger out there, no matter what your circumstances were. So it must be very exciting when you see a patient like the one that you mentioned who is taking responsibility, because that's where our power is. And we feel empowered when we discover, hey, this life is my responsibility. These relationships are my responsibility. And breaking that pattern, because I see it in myself, how we'll gravitate towards something that's familiar, but not what is best for us. And I love, Beattie, the whole idea with everything to ask yourself the question, is this in my best interest?
Right. Well, it really forces all of us, you know, to really take a look at, you know, the gestalt of our lives as we go through every single day. Is this chocolate cake, is that going to be in my best interest? Well, maybe you want to have a quarter of a piece or something. You know, is it in my best interest to be drinking, you know, a bottle of wine? I mean, it really forces people, you know, if they engage in this sort of a process, to really be introspective. And even more importantly, to be honest with themselves.
Yes, I just love that. Now, another thing, and I have been hearing about this for years, couples not having sex. I mean, couples that they live together for 10 years, and I've heard they haven't had sex in 10 years. What do you think of this? How does a lack of sex impact a relationship?
Well, I'll tell you, I was looking at some of the statistics, and the statistics are very, very difficult to confirm one way or the other. There are some studies that show that couples are having more sex, but in my world, the couples that I treat typically are not having a lot of sex, and they have allowed everything to get in the way of their relationships, including their sex lives, their work and their children and life. And everybody is hurrying around and we're wanting bigger and better and more. And we basically forget about the couple. Not only about our sex lives, but about supposedly the most important relationships that we have in our life, which is with somebody who we promised to love and to cherish. Initially, I mean, one hopes that there's going to be a lot of chemistry. And, you know, as time goes on, obviously, you know, the kind of chemistry that you felt the first couple of dates that you're with somebody, or the first, you know, time you made love with somebody, I mean, things can change over time. But it's about being mindful of the importance of making sure that you are putting aside the time and closing the door and getting babysitters and making sure that part of your relationship is not going to go by the wayside. And it's something that couples have to talk about, you know, to be able to say, listen, honey, it's been a little while and I miss your touch. I miss our getting together. However, Valerie, if the couple is not in a good place, if they are angry with one another, if there are a lot of unresolved issues, unspoken kinds of issues that have, you know, really been allowed to build up over time, that may be an indication, you know, of why we as a couple are not wanting and not engaging in sex. And of course, you know, if you're feeling really depressed and anxious and you have a lot of your own issues too, I mean, that is going to interfere. But communication is really, really key. And people have to understand, now, unless they don't care about sex at all. Now, if you're in a relationship and you don't care about sex and your partner doesn't care about sex, then there's not a problem. I mean, even though studies show that we live longer and it's good for our hearts and it's good for our blood pressure and it's good for all kinds of things, you know, medically and emotionally, you know, if you want to be in a sexless marriage, that's okay too, as long as two people are in agreement. You know, and then of course, you know, things change physically. And I'm going to share a story that I wasn't really knowing if I was going to share or not. But a couple of months ago, I thought I had a UTI. So I was going to the doctor and there was really nothing showing up in the test. And the last thing that I was thinking about, although my husband and I have always had a really good sex life, was sex. And something was really off. And I had every test under the sun. There was a kidney stone. What was actually going on? So finally, and it should have been really the first place that I went for a consultation, I went to see my gynecologist, Dr. Judith Schwartz here in New York City. And she examined me and she said, "Beady," she says, "I know that you are past, you know, menopause, but it looks to me that your estrogen levels are probably really off." Now, as a sex therapist, that should have probably been one of the first things that I was thinking about, but it did not even dawn on me. Long story short, I went on 2 weeks of the VeggieFarm estrogen, and I'm now on the VeggieFarm twice a week, and everything has changed. She said that my tissues looked like, you know, a young girl's tissues. And I was saying to my husband, Jim, I said, "I can't believe I'm feeling all the sexual desire that I had not felt for several months as a result of low estrogen." So that is something else that we really need to be aware of. And of course, for men, they need to have their testosterone levels looked at as well. So we have to take a very holistic approach if we're looking at, you know, our relationships and if we're looking at our sex lives.
Yes, there are physiological reasons that, you know, there may be an interruption, you know, some kind of interference. And I wish that doctors were more proactive. I mean, they just don't bring it up as we're going through menopause. I use a bioidentical hormone cream, and I've used VagiFem as well. So that whole element, I mean, I know women who say sex hurts too much, but they don't go and seek help. There's a lot of lack of information about this. But I mean, for couples that still where they still want to have a sexual relationship and it's just not happening, how does that lack of intimacy, I imagine there's a loneliness and an alienation and a lack of connection. Even if couples don't have sex, but they cuddle or they have some kind of bonding experience or kissing, it seems like it's such an essential piece.
I think it really is an essential piece. And, you know, even if people are physically, let's say for men, if they're not able to get, you know, erections for a variety of reasons, of course, you know, with men who are dealing with erectile dysfunction, I mean, most men will go, you know, and they will ask their doctor for Viagra, Levitra, Cialis. But the real question, you see, that's bandage therapy. And sometimes it works, you know, maybe 50% of the time it works. But the real question that has to be asked and that has to be discovered is, why is there not sufficient blood flow to the penis? Is there a cardiac issue going on? And I have seen that with a couple of my male patients where it was a cardiac problem that was undiagnosed, that was actually, in quotes, the presenting problem when the man went to talk to his doctor, his urologist, about why he couldn't get an erection. So, I mean, talk about having to educate consumers. But I think that, you know, when things start to get off track, whether or not it's a lack of affection or, you know, your sex life seems to be dwindling or disappearing, we have to give ourselves permission to be able to talk to our partners and to bring the issues up, regardless of how difficult and regardless of how sensitive, you know, the subject matter is. And if people are not able to do it on their own, I mean, I always say to people, this life is way too difficult to navigate on your own and to give yourself permission to actually reach out and ask for help. I mean, I had a really interesting situation with a patient of mine who is 67 years old. She's bipolar. She has a million different physical problems and bladder problems and just a lot of things have been going on with her for many, many years physically. And she has a boyfriend, and they have been together for 3 years. They never had sex. And I was kidding with her. I said, "You know something?" I said, "You know, what about, you know, if you and your boyfriend, you know, were trying to, you know, get a little bit ahead of just kissing and touching." And she was, interestingly enough, she was fascinated by the idea. And I can't believe that they hadn't really talked about it, but they had not really talked about it. So I used to be the spokesperson for a couple of different sex toy manufacturing companies. I can't tell you how many vibrators I have here that were sent to me. I have boxes. So I gave her one of my vibrators that, of course, I had never used. So this is 67-year-old woman, multiple physical problems. So she sends me an email over the weekend. She says, you're not going to believe it, you know. We did it with the vibrator, and I had my first orgasm in maybe 40 years. It was wonderful. So she came in to see me this week, and there was a smile on her face, and she felt transformed, and he felt good. And I was asking her, so when are you going to do this again? But it took a little bit of a nudge. And of course, as a sex therapist, I mean, I always ask about people's sex lives. It's not, but you're right, Valerie, that when you go to the doctor, nobody's ever asked me about my sex life, ever. How is it? Is it good? Is it bad? Is it non-existent? So we as consumers need, you know, with podcasts like yours and radio shows like mine, you know, we need to educate people and give them permission, to give ourselves permission to bring up the tough subjects, to be able to engage in conversation. And once there's a conversation, at least that is the first step to be able to begin to hopefully resolve the issues that are not working.
Yes, you know, when you talk about communication, I think about how sometimes people, they feel ashamed of their desires. They feel ashamed to communicate them. And maybe sometimes they're also disconnected from them where they don't even know what they are, or they're disconnected from their bodies. And I'm curious again, do you find that people do feel a sense of shame or that they are disconnected in this way?
I don't so much hear people talking about feeling ashamed. I hear more about people, for a variety of reasons, just being shut down. And they will say to me, what's happened to my sex drive? I used to enjoy, whether it was masturbation, whether or not it was just being touched. I am shut down. So, of course, my job is to figure out what is it that has shut you down. Is it life? Is it relationship? Is it money? Is it kids? Is it, you know, physical problems? Is it your relationship? Is it your depression? Is it your drinking? Is it your prescription medication that has really numbed you out, which, as we know, so many of the pills really do a good job in numbing you out. And they have all kinds of sexual side effects, which also is something that doctors very rarely talk about. And patients, how do they know to even ask? They don't. So, you know, it's about finding out what is at the root of this particular problem and then finding, you know, a variety of different, you know, hopeful solutions that will help people begin to resolve some of the difficulties, whether it's in the bedroom or whether or not it's in the boardroom.
Excellent. You know, one thing I wanted to backtrack a little about is erectile dysfunction, where I have heard so many stories of men going on a vegetarian diet and not having any erectile dysfunction problems. Of course, sometimes it's psychological, but again, there are physiological reasons, and even something like going on a healthy diet. I think what happens, you know, I've heard it said as we get older, you know, sex isn't important and companionship is important and, you know, these general statements. But I think we can remain in touch with our sexuality until the day we die. You know, it doesn't have an age on it.
I'm with you. And, you know, I've told you, and I want everybody to hear the story about Charlotte.
I love Charlotte's story.
I love Charlotte, too. I miss her dearly. I treated Charlotte in Sarasota a number of years ago. And when I first began with her, she had just lost her husband and was understandably very depressed. It had been a wonderful 65-year-plus marriage. But Charlotte was an amazing woman. And about a year after his death and about a year after the therapy began, she met a man. And the man happened to be one of the doormen at this particular facility where she lived in Sarasota. And he was, you know, maybe 40 years younger than her. And I was very concerned. I was concerned that maybe he was going to take advantage of her financially or in some way. But Charlotte began a sexual relationship with this man. So she's in her mid-80s and he was in his 20s or 30s, which was a little weird. Why a man of 20 or 30 would want to have sex or any sort of sexual contact with a woman in her 80s. But the fact was, is that she was delighted. And one day I used to come to her because she wasn't all that mobile and she wasn't driving anymore. So I arrive at her apartment. And she says, Beatty, she says, I have to ask you something. And of course, we had this great relationship. And I said, sure. Well, you know, ask me anything. She says, I want you to teach me how to give oral sex. 85-year-old woman. I am beyond thrilled. We go into her kitchen, and this is a true story. She had bananas. I showed her exactly what she needed to do. And the next time she saw her young lover, she was able to perform oral sex. And Charlotte died a few years ago, and she left me this amazing, amazing, gorgeous hand-painted trunk that was schlepped from Sarasota to our apartment here in New York City. And I remember thinking, I want to be Charlotte when I'm 85 and 90. She died at 90. And she was as vibrant emotionally and physically and sexually. And there were actually, Valerie, a number of Charlottes in Sarasota that I treated, where these women who were in their mid-80s and some older that had active sex lives, however they did it, who cares what they did, whether there were erections or vibrators or masturbation. But they were sexually alive and active until the end of their lives. So it is a myth, everybody, that because you get to a certain age, that your sex life and desires just need to go by the wayside. That is, unless you don't care. And if you don't care, you don't care, right?
Yes, absolutely. But I love the story about Charlotte. And I love the idea that at a later age, where you have more time, you know, certainly we don't have to worry about pregnancy, that it could be a very ideal time before you leave this planet to explore your sexuality in a new way. So I'd like people to look at it as an opportunity to grow and develop in that area rather than shutting down. It's a very important piece for our health, our overall mental, emotional, and physical health.
Right. And it's fun. I mean, you know, yes. We can talk about emotional and mental, but the fact is that what could be just more delicious than having orgasms, whether you have a partner, whether you don't have a partner, you know, which sort of leads us into a discussion about pornography.
Yes, I was curious about your feeling about it. I guess I think of people that watch pornography as younger. I don't know. You would know, of course, are there older people also watching pornography? You know, how popular is it among an older age group? And how do you feel about it?
All right. Well, I happened to do some research in preparation for this podcast. Now, there was not a breakdown in age, but let me give everybody some of the numbers, which you may or may not be surprised. Okay, 46 to 74% of men are active pornography users. 16 to 41% of women are active pornography users. And Pornhub, which of course is a very major porn site, has reported, and listen to this, over 39 billion searches and 42 billion visits during 2019, suggesting 115 million visits per day.
Oh, my goodness.
So that is what is going on in the world of pornography. It obviously, it spiked during the pandemic, you know, it certainly helped with social distance and the virus. But of course, there was a lack, you know, during all this time, as we know, I mean, there was a real lack of social connectedness. So it was a great stress reliever, anxiety reliever, and great antidepressant. And I think, you know, again, I think as long as people are in agreement that this is what they want to do in their private lives, in the privacy of their bedrooms, whether or not they have a partner or whether they don't have a partner, then so be it. Like anything else, if it begins to take over your life, then there is an issue. I have a woman that I'm treating right now who's 26 years of age. She's beautiful. She's educated. And she is a sugar baby. So men pay her upwards sometimes of $5,000 a day to have sex with them. And one of the big concerns, and I've just actually started to work with her, one of the bigger concerns that she has is that she's becoming addicted to porn. And, you know, I really am curious to get into that because she has sex, I mean, with many, many men during the course of a month and even sometimes during the course of a day. In fact, it's interesting that her number one concern when she contacted me was not the fact that she was a sugar baby, but the fact that she was worried that the porn that she was viewing was going to get in the way of her very big job that she has. So here's somebody who's got a huge job. She, you know, she's making thousands of dollars a day having sex with men. She's made many suicide attempts, has had serious bouts of depression, anxiety. I've only seen her a couple times. I think she is bipolar. I think she's on the wrong medication. So there are a lot of things that we're having to figure out. So here we have a 26-year-old who is, you know, expressing concern, not so much that she's has all these sugar daddies in her life, but that she is becoming more and more obsessed with porn and that it's taking up so much of her days and nights.
Yeah, I think what I hear you saying is that when it crosses the line and becomes an addiction rather than just something that, you know, someone does and enjoys, and maybe they enjoy it with a partner, that's when it becomes more problematic, when it goes into the addiction phase.
Right. Like alcohol, like prescription medication, like exercise, you know, when anything becomes really over the top and when it starts to interfere with our day-to-day lives and our day-to-day activities. But these statistics, they're big numbers. One other number here is people who are addicted, as we're talking about, to porn spend apparently 11 to 12 hours per week. And I think that number is probably a bit low watching porn. Mm-hmm. You know, other concerns, you know, there's been studies that show that with porn, that men tend to become more aggressive. So that, I mean, for me, as long as two people are able to enjoy each other and enjoy the porn that they're watching, again, so be it. When things start or things start to become uncomfortable, then again, it's incumbent upon us to speak up, to not say yes when we mean no, and to be mindful of living our lives in ways that are really in our best interest, whether or not it means watching porn, not watching porn, you know, whatever that might be. The mindfulness that we have to bring in to our psyches of making sure that we're living lives in ways that are beneficial and not destructive or self-destructive or self-sabotaging.
Excellent, excellent advice. So we're at the end of our time, and I wanted to know if there was anything else you wanted to share, and also how our listeners get in touch with you.
Well, what I want to share is that I think you are really, you know, you're giving women a real gift, Valerie, really. You know, so oftentimes, you know, we don't get into the nitty-gritty of real discussion and give people some really, really good, accurate takeaway advice, not airy-fairy, not just psychological, not just, you know, intellectual, but very concrete things that people can actually do every single day to improve the quality of their lives and their relationships. Well, for me, you know, I have a private practice here in New York City and in East Hampton. I have just reverted back to seeing people on Zoom for a couple of weeks. I was seeing people live, and there are actually two people who I know very well, and I know that, you know, I don't have to be concerned. So I'm really back on Zoom, which is, you know, something that I was hoping to not have to do, but I'm doing it. We'll see what happens. And, you know, people can find out lots more about me and read my articles on my BeattyCohn.com website. And all the contact information is there. But again, I really want to thank you. You are giving people a gift by having this podcast where you have different experts from various different fields who are really weighing in on very, very important subjects, you know, that affect women over 50 and whatever the age. Yes. It's a gift, Val, that you're giving us.
Yes, thank you. Thank you, Beattie. Well, thank you for the gift of you. Thank you for the gift of spending this time with you. I think that starting today, everything that I do, I'm going to ask the question, is this in my best interest? And living a life through that lens.
Love it.
Thank you so much.
Absolutely.